welcome to Geek Hard, right here on Reality Radio 101. And now, right to your geeks, Andrew Young and Mr. Green.
Welcome to Geek Card, where that's the way you do it, money for nothing and your geeks for free. I'm your host, Andrew Young. With me, as always, is Mr. Green.
Yes, I am.
That was very dramatic of you, the way you really put an accent, like put a hard consonant on each of those monosyllabic words.
Well, I didn't want to step on your toes and just wanted to make sure that I came in and hit my marks and said my lines.
Right, right. Yeah, you're pretty good like that. Now.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, he ruined it, people. You don't see it at home, but he just spilled water all over himself. Good for him. That's the great way to start tonight's show. Yeah. We have a great show coming your way. Later on in the program, we're going to be talking with documentarian Tasha Hubbard about the film Singing Back the Buffalo, which is coming to the Hot Docs Film Festival happening at the end of April. We've also got a movie review coming your way for the Australian horror film Sting, which is directed by a man who we've reviewed his films before. And in just a minute, we're going to be talking with actor, director, and co-writer of the film Hey Victor, Cody Lightning, which is a mockumentary. So we got a mockumentary, a documentary, and a horror film tonight. It's a nice collection of indie film. Good times. You know I like the indie film.
Yeah, no, this is right up your alley this whole night.
Yeah, it's going to be a good time here with great friends and Mr. Green. It's all happening right here.
Oh, I saw what you did there.
We're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Cody Lightning right here, Geek Yard, Reality Radio 101.
Casing, graphics amazing, splash on the scene, had mad kids racing, NES for Genesis, a hard trade, but carts played like they came out the arcade. Altered Beast.
Hey everybody, Jimmy the Short Order Cook here, asking you, what's better than listening to Geek Hard? Answer, listen to Geek Hard while wearing a Geek Hard t-shirt. And there's a place you can get them at tpublic.com/user/geekard. We got a bunch of great shirts there. We got Geek Hard shirts. We got a Mr. Green's Tasty Meat shirt. Hell, we got a Back Issue Bloodbath shirt. For all your geek needs with your geek merch, you want to go to tpublic.com/user/geekard. I'm not just asking you. I'm telling you.
Yeah. Excuse me. Is this beat taken? Oh, cool. Yes. That's nice. Hey. What about those ears? If you're looking for mad rhymes, I might know a few. It's tough.
Welcome back to Geek Hard, right here on Reality Radio 101.
Haters are so cute, yo, dude. You're like a kitten in a snowsuit. Oh, shoot. First things first. Out.
And now, right back to your geeks, Andrew Young and Mr. Green.
Welcome back to Geek Card, folks, on a fabulous Friday night. Andrew Young and Mr. Green here for an exciting 60 minutes of indie film stuff. And we're going to be kicking it off with an interview with Cody Lightning about his mockumentary, Hey Victor. But before we do that, just want to remind you folks that if you want to get in on the show tonight, you can email us at geekardshow@gmail.com. You can let us know. Maybe you've seen Sting, the Australian horror film, about a giant spider. You can give us a review of that. Maybe you've seen Hey Victor. Maybe you've seen Singing Back the Buffalo. You can give us reviews of that. You can write in with questions for our guests or questions for us just to say, hey, tell us about films you've seen that we haven't. Give us some film suggestions. I'm always asking for film suggestions. And, or, you know, just, you know, if you want to find out pressing questions from Mr. Green, like, is he ever going to bring back his meat shop? I know a lot of people like to ask about that. You can do that again. I know he always welcomes that question. He really does. Oh, man. But we're going to start with our first guest of the evening. He is an actor who's been in the business for over 30 years and has now directed his first feature film, a mockumentary that is written and directed by, co-written, directed by him and starring him as him. Please welcome to the program, Cody Lightning.
Hey, Tonsi, what's up?
Oh, it's been doing all right. How you doing, man?
Doing well.
Good stuff. Good stuff. So, of course, Hey Victor, it's had its theatrical run just last month here in Canada. It is coming to VOD and digital on April 16th. For people who haven't had a chance to check out the movie, tell them what it's all about.
Well, you'll get to see Full Frontal Uncle, like I tell people as a disclaimer. Yeah, Hey Victor is just a very vulgar, crass mockumentary loosely based on my life and the lives of other Smoke Signals actors. It is fiction and it is not, I repeat, is not Smoke Signals 2. I'm very clear on that. So people don't watch it and go, well, what the heck was that? I was, you know, Smoke Signals was so great. What was this? It's like, yeah, it's completely different. But everywhere we've shown the film, we've had, you know, awesome response. We've had good write-ups on it, great reviews. You know, it was just a joke amongst some friends of mine and myself.
A 15-year-old joke, 15. Right? Yeah.
And we decided to write a script and make it into a feature. So when I had the idea for it, I originally pitched it as a short film. And it was just going to be Simon Baker and myself, the two child actors of Smoke Signals. And we would have like a 10 or 15 page, you know, short film that we would just, you know, buddy out on and have fun for a week and submit it to some festivals. And we pitched it and we didn't win any of the pitches that we were in. And they were saying, this is a feature film or a series. And we're like, whoa. So, you know, I got in touch with my writing partner, Sam Miller, and wrote this thing and submitted it. We got our funding and made it. And it's been such a blast, man. Like, just that hearing that laughter in the theaters is so, like, it just takes over, man. And it's cool to see that, you know, people are loving it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, honestly, Cody, as you mentioned, this is a 15-year-old joke. It really harkens back to something that me and my friends used to joke about. And I'm going to dust off the old script now and start bringing it up. And that's a Backdraft on Ice for Kids. You know, like, this is like, it feels like this is kismet, me watching this movie. You know, you're giving me a lot of inspiration.
See,
here
I thought
this.
You were going to say that you were working on a mockumentary about Cody Lightning as well. this is finally your inspiration to do it. Say, oh, it works.
That's the second project.
There you go.
James, did you say Backdraft on Ice?
Yes, Backdraft the musical on ice for kids.
Whoa!
A lot of elements colliding there. You got your fire, you got your ice.
Yeah.
Ay, ay, ay.
Oh, my God. But this film, like you talked about it, that it's fictionalized versions of yourself and some of the other actors from the 1998 film Smoke Signals, which, of course, those people, like those actors, known for other parts as well. You yourself, though, even though you've done a bunch of things for years, people still yelled "Hey Victor" at you for apart from when you were a kid. Is this kind of like a reaction to it? Like, just sort of like, did it ever annoy you to the point where it's like, now I'm going to make it my own? I'm going to take it back.
No, never. Never was it annoying. And so there's people that have even messaged me before because Smoke Signals, the memes that people make are insane. And I love all of them. People are like, don't you ever get annoyed at that? I'm like, hell no. I'm a comedian. I have a wild sense of humor. I love this. So the more the merrier for me. And it just worked so well. Like when I have a very warped sense of humor. And so when I talk about certain things in my life or splice things up for a story, you know, to get a laugh in a story, people are like, why aren't you doing more comedies? Because all the films I've done before are very serious roles, you know, a young teenager in a mental institution with Joseph Gordon-Levitt, a husband on a road trip where a car breaks down and I try to kill her, like all these very like dark, serious roles, and never comedy. And so I wasn't getting put out for anything like that. So I'm like, I'm just going to make it myself. And what better to do than make it about something from Smoke Signals, which was, it's such an iconic film. And so here, the history behind Smoke Signals, it was the first, and now no one has corrected me on this, so I still think it was an indigenous film that was independently made that went to a film festival, Sundance Film Festival. It won, it got distribution, and it was out in theaters everywhere. That's the first time that's ever happened. That's huge. That is such a huge milestone, and I got to be a part of that. And now Hey Victor has done the same thing. We've made it. We've gone to Tribeca Film Festival, TIFF, film festivals all over the world. We got distribution. It's in theaters now. And it's a cool part of history repeating itself in like a really awesome ass way.
Yeah, it's amazing, man. But what I really love, because you brought up the comedy, what I love about this film is kind of like these, because again, you know, like I know there was improvising and stuff in the film, but like jokes that you guys obviously put a lot of time into that are like 30 seconds on the screen. It's like, oh wow, they care that much. Like Residential School, the musical, and the Victor versus Thomas Nintendo game, things like that. It's like, yep. You know, it's like, oh, we put time and thought into production into this. And it's like, they're there for a second. How important was it for you to like pepper those types of like jokes throughout?
Oh, that it was huge. And so with my cast, I made sure everyone knew that this is strictly guideline. Our script, we're not glued to any of it. And there's some writers and filmmakers that are very firm by sticking to what's on the page. We want to get this done. We want our editors not to have a nightmare. And I didn't care about that at all. I did it completely different. I want to make sure that we, one, are having fun. And anything for the joke, anything that we can add in. So Hannah Cheeseman, who's, you know, my best friend in this,
yeah,
she's an amazing writer and a director herself. So she was able to add so much. The Cherokee forehead and Cherokee nose stuff, that was all her. We added in so much. I'm like, if something's not working, let's chuck it out. And if you want to add something in, let's work it. And we had like a 4-hour version of this where I watched. Because we had to cut so much, you know, for theatrical stuff and to be able to sell it and make it marketable. But we played so much. There's one where it's like, you know, I go and I see Simon and he goes, who's that? And I'm like, oh, you remember Kate? Look, she grew up. She's got titties. And she goes, and her shirt busts open. And like, we just laughed. We laughed our heads off at that. It didn't make it. But every single take was completely different. And there was so much fun. And you know what? At the end, it was our wrap party. We were all done shooting. We're having a blast. It's our last hoorah. I had about 7 or 8 different crew members come up to me and say, dude, this was the funnest shoot I've ever been a part of. Like, I've been on sets that are nightmares. And so have I. I've been on sets where, you know, you get a cast or a crew member that freaking loses a gap, blows a gasket, being upset, pissed off, walks off set, something, right? We didn't have any of that. We were all in such like a cool zone that we were able to like, you know, make this gem. And this is going to live on. We got a cult classic here. This is going to live on forever.
Yeah. You know, I when you're talking about that, Cody, it makes me think, like, it's like, obviously, you also did, you know, speaking of like something that's locked in and very, you know, I'm assuming very script driven with the Marvel series Echo, which they Marvel is very particular about how they do everything. What you're talking about with what happened on Hey Victor, I'm just like wondering if you had your way forever, it sounds like you would want every project to be made like this, where it's kind of that free flowing, everybody's having a great time, you know, and not necessarily locked into like lockstep script situations where you're just, you read your words today, you got to get through three pages today and move on kind of thing.
Yes and no. So here's the yes, because it's so much fun to do it that way. But I do understand, like, it depends on the nature of the project, to be honest. If you're working on something that's more serious in nature, or like it's a thriller or some sort, yeah, you might want to stick closer to, but for comedy and then the mockumentary style with two cameras going at once, it was just nothing but playtime. It was nothing but playtime. So, for another project, I might not take the same approach, but for Victor, it worked. So, but yeah, kind of piggybacking what you said, I would love for every project to be like that, because it was so much fun. At the end of every single take, it was like, cut, and everyone is dying laughing. And Carly McTavish, my first AD, after the first few days, she goes, okay, she did a jar, $20 every time someone messed up a scene. And not just for the actors, but crew as well. Like, especially the day when I was working with Colin Mockery. And we did so much playing around. There's one take, it didn't make it, where I'm hugging him, crying, thanking him, and I drop to my knees and I'm like rattling his zipper, gonna pull his pants down. and they just let it keep going, and I'm like, cut, come on. And I'm just going, I'm like, and finally I was like, okay, cut. And you just heard like, like just loads of laughter. So yeah, to be able to play like that and explore and trust is a huge thing. Trusting that your actors are going to contribute what they did, and my actors really contributed such a huge part, like, of this, which made it that much better. And you know, I wouldn't hire people that weren't funny to not be, you know, be funny. Yeah. Everyone in here was game to make fun of themselves. We're not taking ourselves serious here. This is a comedy. Let's do it. And there's nothing out there that's been made like this. So, yeah.
Yeah. Now you say it is a comedy. It's totally a comedy. But amazingly enough, you get these really heartfelt moments within the film. There are moments of drama in there as well. And like one particular one, like, you know, Adam Beach's appearance in the film, it kind of breaks the mockumentary format to, you know, kind of give in, you know, give a little bit more of a touching moment. And was that something that you were like, when you guys were writing the script, that you're like, oh, we want this is a realization moment for the character, so we can just say we're going to step away from the mockumentary format to have this moment?
Yeah, 100%. And that adds to the realness of it. So it is loosely based around all of us.
Yeah.
But it is still true to the core of, we are putting ourselves out there, so we are being ourselves.
Yeah.
Just a more sillier version. So.
No, totally.
Yeah.
So that, you know, like the fact that in the movie, like, you have, I believe pretty much everybody back from Smoke Signals makes it at least a appearance, like Gary Farmer and things like that. When everybody finally saw the script, or, you know, to your point, you know, because it was a lot of improvisation, you know, the first version of the script, was everybody from the group immediately on board, or was there any kind of like, you know, hey, maybe we need to have a conversation about this?
Not with the actors. No, all the actors are like, holy shit, Coates, it's about time, you know, like for something like this. And everyone was on board. Tantu Cardinal wasn't able to make an appearance. She wrote me an email saying, I love this. You're going to have so much fun doing this. You have my permission to use my name, face, image, all that. But I am super busy, which she is. She's doing everything. So yeah. We had to cut we wrote stuff for her, and then Thomas Builds the Fire. My brain isn't working. Anyways, who played Thomas? Evan Adams. God. He loved the script, but for his own personal stuff, he had other stuff going on as well. And he's a doctor, and he was very busy. And he's like, so there was a whole thing where we had written something for him and for Tantu. We just had to nix that. But they were huge supporters of it. Like, if anyone talks to them, they'll be like, oh, we loved it. They were just doing other stuff, which is fine. But there was a casting director that I've known for years, since I was a little boy. And I went to them and said, I would love for you to help me cast my first feature for like the other parts, like the my uncle character and Adam Bleach, we call him the white Adam Bleach, just to find other actors to fill this in. And she's like, I would love to. What an honor. Read the script. About 2 hours later, I get a phone call and she's like, okay, so very funny. And I was like, but are you sure you want to put yourself out there like this? And I'm like, yeah, why? What if people think it's real? Like, this is really real. I was like, I don't care.
But if anybody thought it was real, you have to be nuts. Like, the way this film starts, it's like, there's no way somebody would be make a real documentary and show that part of their life, you know? So.
Yeah. So anyways, I was like, absolutely. And they were like, I love you. Best of luck. But I have to pass. And I was like, no. But, you know, everyone that read it, you know, when we pitch this thing, when we're doing it, it works. And so there's a lot more in the vault that's going to come out after this. My feature project that I just finished pitching is a hockey film. You know, I have a couple other things in the works that I'm doing.
Have you thought about working Backdraft into that hockey film?
Yeah.
Oh, man. But with this film, like, again, as you talked about, it's a fictionalized version of yourself. So it's wild. It's off the wall. For some of the social media marketing, you've kind of really leaned into that persona by spoofing a lot of the big social media, you know, mainstays, like the What's in My Bag and the 69 Questions With and all that sort of stuff, where you just, it's like, I was going through that and like, I had it like a YouTube playlist with actual interviews with you peppered in with these things. And I was like, wait, what? Oh, okay. He's doing that. Okay. I get what he's making fun of here. Cool. So, and then probably my favorite is while it was in theaters, on a Tuesday, you wrote, it's cheap Tuesday, so leave the penny pinching to the pussies and take your idiot friends to see A. Victor. You're like, I want to go balls to the wall with the social media campaign. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And don't hold back with comedy. I just got back. I was at Western University over in Ontario, London. And, you know, there was a bunch of film students. And I said, you know what, with comedy, you can't hold back. You have to go. And I would rather be told to calm down than to turn it up a notch. That's just me. I would rather be told, yeah, I don't know, you gotta tone it down, than to be like, come on, you've got more in you. And I see like kind of like woke culture / cancel culture affecting comedy in a huge way. Because when I grew up, you know, going to like comedy stores and, you know, comedy places, I grew up on like Dice Clay and Eddie Murphy and the Jerky Boys, like really vulgar, rank humor that wouldn't fly today. Right. But to me, that's still funny. And, you know, you look at like South Park and Family Guy, like they have, it's no holds barred. And so, for me, especially with Indigenous people, I've worked with youth for 6 years. I was a youth worker and I go to ceremony and stuff like that. And I'm with a lot of elders as well. The most vulgar stories and humor that I get are from our children and our elders. Little kids, when they don't think there's an adult in the room, the stuff they say is like, whoa. And you get little kids from the res, it's amped up. It's times 10. And same thing with elders. That's why in the film, why I had that residential school, the musical joke.
Yeah.
I was at a ceremony one time and I'm sitting there. I was actually going through a pretty rough time in my personal life. And I was like, oh man, I'm there. I'm going to pray. Like, holy crap. I got a lot going on. Oh, and I see these two elders and one of them goes, hey, I need you to bring your pipe to my house and, you know, have ceremony in my house. There's been stuff going on at like, you know, 3 a.m. The cabinets has been opening and closing. I've been checking, you know, the different drafts in the house to make sure there's no air coming in. And I'm a little spooked and, And this other elder said, oh, okay, oh, 3 a.m.? And the 3 a.m. And they started joking about that. Never mind, I'll give you the 3 a.m. And they're laughing. I didn't know what that meant. I didn't know what that meant. And then I went up to one of them. I said, what is that? You guys are laughing. 3 a.m. Oh, that's residential school stuff. 3 a.m. That's when the nuns and the priests, they'd wake us up and do really bad stuff to us. So yeah, that's the 3 a.m. And I'm like, whoa. You know, these are elders who have gone through traumatic things and they're able to somehow joke about this stuff at a ceremony. That is so powerful. That is so powerful. And so, you know, that's, you hear it all the time. Laughter is healing, you know, laughter is medicine. Yeah. So,
well. Oh my God. Well, you mentioned kids there, and in this film, of course, you have the acting classes with the kids throughout, which I loved because, first of all, the kids felt like real kids in these acting classes. Like, I remember when I was in acting classes when I was a kid, that's what it was like. It was very much like a, I'm in love. No, you're not. That sort of thing. And so you're working with them. They're doing the wooden stuff. But the stuff you're saying to them and the coaching you're giving them, that to me was like, I was like, you know what? If I had a coach like that, I probably would have stayed in acting.
The pills, the crack, the glue. Oh.
Yeah, I really like the punch him in the face. It's like, but she's a girl. It's like, no, you, she's not a girl in this scene. Punch her. And I was like.
And then the quick cut to the, yeah, give it to her, and you can hear the punching.
Yeah. And that was so much fun. Casting those kids was so much fun because I know a lot of those kids. And they know me as like youth center Cody, like the youth worker that works with them, takes them on trips to, you know, the pool or the water park or go-karts and stuff like that. Like fun Cody. They've only heard of actor/director Cody. So for me to have them on board, and I let their parents know, like I let them read the script and said, this is what you're signing them up for. You good? And they're like, oh yeah. Okay, cool. Like,
well, you know, that brings up an interesting point, Cody. Like I, you know, a lot of, you know, indigenous filmmaking, you know, whether it's shows or movies, whatever, it's always, you know, historically has been more of, to your point of even about smoke signals on that kind of more serious, you know, kind of thing, because obviously there's a lot of trauma. There's a lot of serious stuff to talk about. We don't see as many comedies, but I think that's over the last few years, I've started to notice that's changing, you know, and
yeah,
it sounds like from what you're saying, like it's an important part of that growth of your culture and getting out there and getting your own entertainment.
100%. Yep. And so, you know, there's shows like Reservation Dogs and there's other shows that are happening now. Reservation Dogs is done now, unfortunately, but there's going to be a lot more to come out. And I also have a TV series called I'll Just Effing Kill You, that I've been writing with some friends, that we're going to, in the next, you know, few years, hopefully that takes off, but that's going to be, it's like the indigenous Shameless, so to say.
Oh, wow.
Where, you know, you laugh your head off at these characters and certain things they do, and then you cry your eyes out because of the stuff that they're going through. And everyone between, that's real life. It's real. It's authentic.
Yeah. Yeah. No, totally, man. And so, yeah, I guess with something like this, you know, like with this mockumentary where it was balls to the wall, you had 21 days to make it. And Mr. Green brought up, you know, of course, you were Biscuits in Echo for Marvel. To have a project like this, where it's like 21 days to make it, balls to the wall, to then also be in a project where it's like, oh, I get to live for 6 months, half the year in Atlanta, work here and there, all this, right? So is it nice to have that kind of shifting gears in your career, like to do both?
Oh, 100%. So anyone that has made any film project ever independently knows we're getting this shot no matter what. Yeah. We're losing light. Well, no, well, we're fucking going again, or, you know, whatever it is. Like it's tough. It's like, if we don't get this today, we're screwed. And then you got like the cushion of Marvel with a way bigger budget, or it's like, ah, crap, we didn't get that. Ah, we'll come back tomorrow. We're going to rent two whole city blocks again tomorrow. Just that's okay. All right. We're doing that. Okay. You know, like, you know, it's a, it's a money thing. Like, so, you know, the more money, the more luxury and cushion you have. But, you know, on our, with our project, hey, Victor, we were going through 12, sometimes 15 pages per day. We were going through a lot. So at the end of the day, it's like my brain was just mashed potatoes. Like, oh, wait, did we get this and this? They're like, yeah, we did that yesterday. What? Ah, crap. Okay. Like, it, we were going through so much. And to make sure that we had our locations locked in, because you don't know what the weather is going to be like, if that's going to affect it, if we're just not going to get it. So we were able to get it. And yeah, the luxury, especially with catering on the Marvel project of Echo was nice.
And getting to play a character that wasn't from the comics. So you got to bring your own. There was no preconceived notions about your character. You got to craft that.
Yep. So when I got cast on Echo, Sydney Freeland, the director who I've known for quite some time, when I got cast, I did my intro meeting with all the producers and stuff like that on a Zoom. And it was COVID. So, you know, everything was Zoom. And I was like, do I got to get buff? Do I got to like work out? What do I got to do? And Sydney was like, we love everything about the dad bod, the belly, the chest hair, the lettuce, all of it. I was like, all right. All right.
Oh yeah. No, Biscuits was one of the highlights of that show. There was a lot of great performances, but again, you brought the comedy to that show that was also dealing with some deep, dark stuff. So,
oh yeah, for sure.
Great to see you coming out here doing all the comedies. One last thing before we let you go. One character we didn't talk about in the movie is Chomsky, played by Phil Burke, the investor of the film, who may or may not have ties to the German mob. Have you ever had to deal with questionable money guys in your career? Where you're like, is he a make guy?
No. And when I cast this, I knew right away, because I've known Phil for years. I was like, when I was writing it, I was like, I picture Phil. Like, we'll reach out to others, but I picture Phil. And Phil just nailed it, like, to a T, and did so good. But I've never had that, but I know, like, we had an alternate ending where Cody, the character, goes to Germany and starts his own tribe and starts, like, his own German native tribe, because Germans love native people. And, you know, there's people on the internet, German people, who have nicer regalia and nicer things than us for our own ceremonies. It blows my mind. I'm like, where did they get that? Like, on the internet, like online? It's so wild. So I was like, what if we had something where Cody goes to Germany and, I don't know, gets tied into the German mob somehow and becomes like
sequel.
There you go. There you go. Fire, was it Fire Science 2? There we go. Oh, man, but I am looking forward to whatever you have next coming, and I really hope that they all have zombie priests in them. I really do.
Oh, dude, that was the best. How was that reveal? Every time, every screening we've done, it's just like, as soon as zombie priests!
Oh, man, well. Cody, I want to thank you for coming on the program tonight, man. Of course, as I said, Hey Victor is coming to VOD and digital in Canada on April 16th. So people definitely check it out. And the next project you have, man, we definitely want to have you back. Thanks for talking with us tonight.
Yeah, thank you so much. Appreciate it, you guys.
Thanks, Cody.
Good night. See ya. So that was Cody Lightning. As I said, you can catch Hey Victor on VOD and digital in Canada on April 16th. We're going to take a commercial break right now. When we come back, we will be giving our review of Sting right here. Key Card, Router Radio 101.
That's Lenny Boudelier, a name more than a few humans fear. When he walked into a room, the room would clear. Eight ball jacket, troop suit, or Puma gear. Grade 2 pierced his ear with a boutonniere.
Remember when you used to go to the comic shop and browse through the stacks, picking up comic after comic, talking to your fellow customers and the store owner about what books you should buy?
What kind of outside people daywalker nonsense are you talking about? I don't go outside.
Well, thank goodness for Back Issue Bloodbath with Andrew Young
and Petula Neal.
When we talk about comics old and new.
Mostly old.
But sometimes new. Every Wednesday, new episodes drop at geekartshow.com or wherever you catch your pods. Check it out and have yourself a good.
Yo. The Iron Lion, I rise defiant when I'm arriving. I'm ionizing the tyrants that you've been idolizing. The diamond shining, defining myself in any climate. In rainforest, my pain flourish, I try to hide it. But it comes out in my words.
Welcome back to Geek Hard right here on Reality Radio 101.
No longer violent, reset my mind with the psilocybin. And now my time is arriving if you've been occupying my throne. I'm breaking.
And now back to your geeks, Andrew Young and Mr. Green.
Welcome back to Geek Card. Andrew Young and Mr. Green here. In just a moment, we're going to be giving our review of Sting, the new horror film. Before we do that, we're going to read some of your emails. We got an email from Ron L. that says, for Mr. Green. Starts off by saying, Nick's on Sting. Hey, for Mr. Green. And do you want to describe the picture that was sent to you, Green?
Yeah, I'm still drooling as I look at this. It is a it's just a nice meme of a plate of bacon, tasty, delicious, yummy, like perfectly cooked bacon. But other than that, it says Miss Piggy Jigsaw set for sale, $50. And I'm like, yeah.
There you go.
But you know what? It's bacon, so I'm all on board. So, there you know, thanks, Ron. Appreciate it.
There you go. Thank you, Ron. We got an email from Connie S. that says, hello, geeks. Cody is hilarious. Funny shit. Sting stinks. Hey to the old man. Or should we call my name? I said, yeah. Yeah. It was Connie there. Hey, Connie, how's it going? I'll come by later. Okay. And then Connie also gives a movie recommendation. Movie to see? Love Tora, Tora, Tora. You know, I've never actually seen Tora.
Really? Oh,
no,
wow.
I haven't seen it. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, no, for sure. It's a good one. Actually, I just watched rewatched The Devil's Brigade this week. The one about semi-real life fictional version of Canadian and American forces joining up to create a special missions force for the first time in World War II.
Okay, well, there you go. I'll have to check that out, too. All right.
It's just because Tora, Tora, Tora is World War II. It just made me instantly think of it.
I get you, totally. We got an email from our boy Mike D. Not of the 3M Season 1 DJ, the one listener who writes in. Mike D. writes, really? A spider movie? Really? Not interested. No rating. Thank you, Mike D.
We know where Mike D. comes down on spiders.
Yeah. And then we got Matt R., who writes in, the plot for a movie, both creepy and stupid. Is this like Ben in 1972? Shitty movie back then and shitty movie now. Okay.
Well, so nice callback. Not everybody brings up Ben.
Didn't Michael Jackson sing the song for the movie Ben? Or was that the one about the rat? I can't remember now.
Ben is about the rat, yeah.
Ben is about the rat. So then the song was, it was the Jackson 5 that did the...
The
title track for that film. Okay, then we also have Sam W. writing in with a subject line, the movie, period. Hated Sting, but then again, I hate all spiders. My wife wanted to see this. I went for the Raisinettes. It's always important to have a good snack at the movies if you know you're not going to enjoy the movie.
No, absolutely. But Raisinettes wouldn't do it for me. I'm sorry, Sam. Yeah, I'm glad you like Raisinettes, but that's the devil's ass for me.
I like almond glossettes.
Nope. No raisins. Nix the raisins.
I just said almond glossettes. There are no raisins.
Sorry. I hear glossettes. I just immediately think raisins. I apologize. You're right. No, almonds are okay. Almonds are okay. Well, except they take too much water, but they're okay otherwise. Yeah.
Well, let's get into our review of Sting, currently in theaters, written and directed by Kaya Roach Turner. Produced by Align Pictures in Paradise and C Pictures, distributed by Cornerstone Films. Here to read the synopsis is a man you just heard recently, who apparently is going to go talk to his friends later, the old man. Hey, how's it going? Yeah, sorry, I don't have a lot of time here. After raising an unnervingly talented spider in secret, 12-year-old Charlotte must face the facts about her pet and fight for her family's survival when the once charming creature rapidly transforms into a giant flesh-eating monster. Oh, this sounds like it's up Mr. Green's alley right there. It's got the words giant and monster in it, so I wonder what he thinks of that. I gotta go. See ya. There he goes. So, Mr. Green, what did
flash
you think?
Tonight.
What did you, well, he's got places to be, apparently.
Yeah, he does.
Here you go. So what did you think of the giant spider?
Okay, so like many of our listeners who just have already written in, I hate spiders. I'm an arachnophobe. I admit it. I've had terrible nightmares when I was a child about spiders. It's bad. It's really, really bad. However, I am completely and utterly fascinated by them. I think they're one of the most, you know, magical creatures in the universe, especially on land. I have the same thing with sharks. Terrified of sharks. Love shark movies. However, going into this, we got invited to a screening. It didn't work out. And so you went and caught it locally. I went and caught it locally. What an ordeal to go see this movie. Couldn't go see it last night. I had to go see it today. And I had to go to that piece of shit Cineplex theater around the corner. God, I hate that place. Hate it.
Oh. Talking about the Oshawa Cineplex specifically. I have no problem with Cineplex. I live in Toronto.
No.
All of the Cineplexes in Toronto are fine by me.
The Cineplex that we normally would go to, and that we were supposed to go to on Monday to see the screening, I have no problem with that. Right? Scotiabank, it's great. It's a great theater. I like that. The one up here anyways, it's just bothers me. It just bothers me to no end.
So what did you think of the film?
No, the film itself, okay, so unlike our listeners, I really enjoyed it. I really liked it. It harkened back for me to those 80s monster films, you know, in like late 60s, early 70s monster films, where they kind of like, it doesn't make a lot of sense. And, you know, to everybody's point about the story and the script and everything like that, it's not supposed to make sense. You know, like the fact that it's some kind of weird asteroid baby fucking spider thing that grows and becomes this super spider that kills everybody. You know, I know I'm ruining it for a lot of people. It's pretty clear from the trailer. That's what's going on here. I really had a lot of fun with it. I was expecting, you know, deep, but like I wasn't expecting Tolstoy. I wasn't expecting Shakespeare. I just wanted to see some monster spider.
Some true pathos from this spider.
Well, you kind of did when you saw the mandibles in the up close face shot. I'm like, yeah, that was a good close up. And I was like, that's a nasty ass looking spider. That's what I got to say. But yeah, it was just like, but we know from Kaya's work previously on like Wormwood and Wormwood 2, and his other films that this is kind of like this is his niche. And this it filled a lot of check boxes for me, including giant insects. I'm cool with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, for me, I thought the pacing was a little bit slow at the beginning, but then I remembered that I kind of find that about all of Kaya's films. I always find the first act to be kind of dragging, but then once it picks up, it gets pretty good. And I always enjoy the third act of his films, and I thought the third act was really fun. And I thought they did a really good job of building up the Ethan and Charlotte characters of that kind of found father-daughter relationship. And I, even though, you know, it wasn't like it was like, you know, an amazing story, it was like a story that I recognized and went, no, I think they did a pretty good job with that.
Yeah. And I think Aaliyah Brown, who plays Charlotte, I think she, you know, she did a really great job for the role that she had, you know, and obviously trying to, you know, she's essentially the star. She's got to carry that movie. Again, it kind of reminds me, you know, things like Child's Play, things like that, you know, those that old school like 80s, like the young kid has to help save the day kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, even though there is some there is definitely some, you know, some love thrown to the original Terminator film in this. And I totally am cool with that. I love that. And also aliens, like you can see a lot of Kaya's references on his, you know, he's wearing those on his sleeve here. And I am all good with all of that, you know, including arachnophobia. I had a lot of fun with it. It's exactly what I was hoping for.
Yeah, I thought it was all right. So are you saying see it in theaters or wait till rental or streaming or skip it all together?
If you're into this kind of film, go see it in the theaters. But for I think most people, streaming is probably the best place for them.
Yeah, I'd say wait for rental or streaming on this one as well. We're going to take a commercial break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Tasha Hubbard about Singing Back the Buffalo right here Geek Hard, Reality Radio 101.
The bar stools shaking.
Want to advertise on Geek Hard and be heard by thousands of listeners? It's easy, it's simple, it's fun. Email us at geekhardshow@gmail.com for information on our advertising packages today.
Welcome back to Geek Hard right here on Reality Radio 101. And now back to your geeks, Andrew Young and Mr. Green.
Welcome back to Geek Card. Andrew Young and Mr. Green here on a fabulous Friday night. And we're now ready for our last guest of the evening. Our guest tonight is a documentarian filmmaker who's made a number of films. Her latest film, Singing Back the Buffalo, is coming to the Hot Docs Film Festival in Toronto at the end of the month. And she's on here to talk about it with us tonight. Welcome to the program, Tasha Hubbard.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming on. So for people who have not heard about Singing Back the Buffalo, what is it all about?
Yeah, so the film actually, I think, started about 20 years ago. I had been invited to go see what's known as a buffalo rib stone. And these are big stones that are scattered throughout Saskatchewan and Alberta and Montana. And they're stones that are have a place in our, you know, our histories and our traditional stories. And I didn't know they existed. And, you know, got brought to the stone by some elders and we sang a song to it. And it just started coming in my mind, you know, what, you know, how enormous of a presence that the buffalo had been in our lives as Plains Indigenous peoples. And, you know, I started to think, like, what kind of impact did that have on us as a people, you know, to lose this being that we had lived in relationship with for so, you know, millennia, to have it, you know, basically, you know, almost destroyed in a few decades, you know, what impact did that have? And so I just started to think a lot about that. And I was already a filmmaker at the time. And I just thought, someday I'm going to make a film about the buffalo. And then I, you know, so the film really is, you know, an exploration of the relationship, that deep relationship that we have as Plains Indigenous peoples. And that spans mostly the Northern Plains. So nations that are in what is now known as Montana and South Dakota and Wyoming and Alberta. And really about, you know, the love we have and the way forward is, you know, we see land that's deeply unhealthy. We know that drought is coming. We know that climate change is here. And, you know, what is the keystone species that is missing, that has been missing for too long? It's the buffalo. And so the film, you know, looks and I go there because that's actually my academic research as well. Yeah. And so, you know, it's the efforts that, you know, the collective efforts that Indigenous peoples are undertaking to try and bring our relative back.
Yeah. As I was watching the film, Tasha, I was, you know, like, to your point, right? Like a lot of people, I'm assuming, who are going to get to see this film is, you know, how little any of us truly know about this species, because I was aware, like a lot of people, that obviously that, you know, Europeans came to North America and wiped out a species that, you know, as you're talking about the film, millions upon millions of buffalo used to roam the range like constantly. And to your point, several decades and almost wiped out to nothing, like literally just like tens of buffaloes, you know, survive. And it's unbelievable. But one of the things in the film that really caught me was, as you mentioned, is about the keystone species and how I didn't realize how much the buffalo mattered to our world. Like the, when you were describing, like they help, you know, with their hooves, you know, break up the ground, and then their fur transfers the seeds. And then the, I forget what it's called now, but where they flop and then they dust
they
themselves.
Wallow.
And yeah. How the wallow creates puddles. And I was just, and as you're describing it in the film, I was just like, wow, that's so many things that this one animal is doing, but that's part of a greater tapestry of beings, which, by the way, I love how in the film you call them beings.
Yeah.
And I was like, this is just an amazing way to think about this instead of just, oh, that's an animal and this is a, like, that's a bird or that's a buffalo. Yeah. It's beings that are matter.
In my academic work, that's a lot of the work that I, you know, in writing and thinking that I've been doing is like, well, what does that, you know, what does the term animal mean? And, you know, for Indigenous peoples and in our thought and in our consciousness, you know, it's like human beings are not the only people. Like, we don't have the exclusive, you know, right to peoplehood. You know, we understood that other beings also had peoplehood and had rights and had responsibilities. And that was shared. It was a collective sharing of that. And so, you know, getting away from sort of othering and whatnot, because, you know, I think what we're seeing in the world is, you know, we're viewing the environment that we live in as resources for our use, right? As human beings, as opposed to thinking of, you know, these, all of these beings are our relatives that are working in collaboration with each other to keep life going, ours included. And that's so out of balance. And that's ultimately, you know, to bring that balance back. I mean, that's what's missing. Is the buffalo. And when they are able to come back, you know, it's very much controlled and, you know, limited. And so, yeah, I kind of wanted to get behind some of that. Like, well, why is that? You know, why are moose and elk and every other able to move around and no one thinks anything of it? And it's like, but buffaloes, oh, you know, a little herd of 100 buffalo gets out and it's headlines, right? Like, oh no, you know, scary herd of buffalo. And, you know, and they're like, you know, they get bad press, but it's because people are not smart in how they engage with them. And, you know, I always say I'd much rather run into a buffalo and give it respectful boundaries. And, you know, 99% of the time it's going to be like, yeah, I get that. I'm going to keep my distance too, as opposed to a moose who's just like, you're in my space. I don't like you. And I'm going to tell you right now, and you better be able to run or get behind something, right? They're not inherently dangerous. They exist. They're big, but you know, they have their purpose and they know what it is. You know, they haven't forgotten what their purpose is, living on this land. Yeah. It's just us who've forgotten.
Oh, no, for sure. I was, as you're mentioning that, like in the film, I was thinking the exact same thing, because like I'm from Newfoundland originally, and I like my family hunts elk and moose and, you know, and it's just like they're everywhere, to your point, like literally everywhere. But in Buffalo, like I don't, and you do mention some of those reasons. And I just, every one of those ones I heard, I was like, that's really dumb. Like,
yeah. Well, there's a few things that maybe could use some work, hey? Yeah,
yes. Totally. Yeah. It's, God. Every documentary or movie I see that deals with issues like this, it's always the same. It always comes back to that same thing where I'm like, that's really not smart. We need to be better, all of us collectively, not just Indigenous people. You know, it's everybody has to get on board.
And that's the hope, right? Is that, you know, I made the film for Indigenous peoples, for sure, because that relationship and that knowledge has been impacted, right? And we know we're starting to really understand that, I think, especially in Canada, but, you know, all around the world, around, you know, the legacies of colonialism and what that's done. You know, at the same time, you know, I think you're right. We're all in this land. We're all in this, at this point, what does it mean for all audiences to rethink, right? To rethink about how we're engaging with, and that's how I put it, the beings we share this land with, they literally are a part of our ecosystem just as we are. And you know, what are we bringing to that? And, you know, being responsible, you know, for our, how we move through, you know, so that harm is mitigated. And, you know, we're like, as I say, we're seeing the impacts of that harm. The other thing that I was gonna mention is, you know, I think that one of the elements around buffalo, and this is where my academic work came into play, is that, you know, there was a saying that was, you know, going around that education is the new buffalo. And, you know, I understand where that came from, and I understand, you know, so, and I'm an educator. I, you know, of course, I believe education is important. But one of the things I got thinking about, and this was my master's work, was, well, actually, the buffalo are our education. In our stories, the buffalo teach us. We learn from them. You know, they taught us the medicines. They taught us the seasons. They taught us, you know, how to move through the land in balance of what is ready to be harvested and eaten in that time, you know, and they knew that. They knew where to be at at times of the year, and we learned that from them. And, you know, even how they organize themselves. That's why I spent time in the film. It's like, where are the calves? They're always surrounded. They're always protected. Yet they're allowed to be themselves, you know, and I love, you know, if there's anything I probably did in the film, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I probably put too many baby buffalo in the film, but I just couldn't help it.
You can't help that.
So much joy, right?
Exactly. They're just the cutest things, for God's sakes. Yeah.
But you know, but they're allowed to have their freedom, and you see that they run all over the place, but everybody keeps an eye on them. Everyone's like, they know they've got, people, they've got lookouts, but it's this collective care that comes in, you know, with their family groups and within their herd. And, you know, we learned that as Indigenous people. We're like, oh, okay, we have to let our children be children. But we also, you know, have to keep them safe.
Of course. Yeah. Well, for people that want to check out the film, it is coming to the Hot Docs Film Festival, which, of course, the Docs Festival runs from April 24th to May 5th. But there are two specific screenings at the TIFF Bell Lightbox, April 26th at 5:30 p.m. and April 29th at 12 noon. People can go to hotdocs.ca. to get tickets, and I really suggest you do. It's part of the Land, Sky, and Sea program. Yeah. Definitely check it out. It is a powerful film. And Tasha, I want to thank you so much for coming on the program here tonight.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me, and I'm really glad the film resonated with you guys.
Definitely.
Yeah, thank you, Tasha. I appreciate it. It was a great film.
Yeah. Thank you.
Have yourself a great night.
Yes, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that was Tasha Hubbard. As I said, you can check out Singing Back the Buffalo at the Hot Docs Film Festival on April 26th and April 29th. Go to hotdocs.ca to get tickets. We got an email in. I'm not exactly sure the name because they didn't leave it. So I'm just going to read the email. It says, "Hello, geeks. To the Geek Show. Good show tonight. I'm going to see Sting tonight. Having any expectations about it, but my girlfriend wants to see it. Forget the Raisinettes. I'm in it for the Twizzlers."
I can get behind that.
I was in it for the Twizzlers. I did it for the Twizzlers.
I hope you have
a great time at the theater. It's interesting that we had two emails that it's like the girlfriend really wanted to see the spider movie.
Ladies like to see the spiders, I guess.
Ladies like them spiders, definitely. Yeah. Well, we come to the end of the program, Mr. Green. Tell the good folks where they can find us.
As always, if you like what we do here, you can find more content, such as our back episode shows of this very show, available at patreon.com/geekard. And for everybody who participates in that right now, we thank you guys so much. You guys are amazing. Of course, additional content always available through YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest. Yes, even Pinterest. Search Geekard Show on any of those platforms and you will find us there. Of course, check out our website, geekardshow.com, for more news, reviews, and the podcast version of this very show. If you didn't listen to us live tonight, well, you know, the best way to hear us is on Monday after 2 p.m. And how can you do that the most efficiently, Andrew?
Subscribe on your podcasting platform of choice.
Absolutely. And of course, if you want to continue to talk to us, email us geekardshow@gmail.com.
I want to thank Tasha Hubbard and Cody Lightning for coming on the program. For Mr. Green and for Yuri in the booth, this is Andrew Young saying, if you're gonna geek out, you might as well geek hard on Reality Radio. Whoa.
I laugh and look back in peace. What happened to these peeps you used to see? They'll say they knew the you you used to be, but truthfully,
thank you for listening to Geek Card with your hosts Andrew Young and Mr. Green right here on Reality Radio 101.